First thing in the morning, right after the time change. You're dedicated. That's good. That's good. For the next few minutes, we're going to be studying in the book of Proverbs. I grew up conditioned and nurtured to love Proverbs. My dad reads out of Proverbs every day and has for decades. Now, he never set us down and had like a very formal class to say, kids, we're going to study Proverbs. But he spoke of Proverbs and he taught us Proverbs almost every day, because he can't do things without thinking about the practical wisdom that Proverbs has in life. And so if we were out on the farm doing something, he would be explaining how we would do it and not even making a big deal at all about it. It would just roll off his tongue, you know, like Proverbs says, and he would just say it. I remember one time when I was about in 9th or 10th grade, he made an announcement at church. And in the announcement, as everyone was accustomed, a proverb just kind of rolled out. And he just kept making the announcement. And one of my best buddies leaned over and said, if we had a problem around here, if people not flushing the toilets, your dad would have a proverb. And he would. There's no doubt about it. He would. So I love Proverbs. And yet when we see the difference that this kind of practical wisdom can make in life, it really is amazing, and it's sad that that wisdom is missing in a lot of people's life. I think about the lighthearted story about the little boy that he was making his way toward the barber shop. The barber looked out the front window and saw him coming, and he said to the customers that were there in the barber shop, hey guys, watch this. This is the dumbest kid in town. And he laughed real loud, and the kid walked in, and they exchanged pleasantries. And then the barber turned around, and he reached in his drawer, and he pulled out, and he said, hey, kid, which one do you want today? Do you want a dollar bill, or do you want 2 quarters? And the little boy pointed, and he said, I'd like 2 quarters, please. And he hands him the 2 quarters, and the little boy turns and walks out. And the guy busted out laughing, and he said, every day that kid comes in here and chooses 2 quarters over a dollar. A few minutes later, one of those customers, he'd gotten his hair cut, he exited, and as he's walking down the sidewalk, he noticed a little boy in front of the ice cream parlor, sitting on the step, licking on his ice cream. Curiosity got him. He paused, he said, son, can I ask you a question? Why do you always choose the 2 quarters over the dollar? The little boy took another lick of his ice cream. He looked up and he said, mister, the day I choose the dollar, the game's over. Now, which one was wise? Which one had the situation in proper understanding and took full advantage of it? You've probably heard the expression, common sense isn't so common anymore. I don't want you to think that Proverbs can simply be reduced to common sense. It's a lot more than that. But I do like to think of Proverbs being a common sense approach to some of the great spiritual teachings that God gives in a way for us to apply them practically to our life. Now, with that in mind, I'd like for you to think about specifically the topic today. Why do people not like people? Have you ever seen someone that they're constantly disliked? And when they talk of people disliking them, they will say things like, I don't know why they don't like me. They just don't like me. Well, rarely does someone not like someone just because they don't like them. There's almost always a reason. As a matter of fact, we can go through Proverbs and we can see a lot more than 40 reasons that people might not like you. Now, let me give a credit and then a disclaimer here. Tommy Nelson wrote a book, 12 Essentials of Godly Success. And in one of the chapters, he listed this idea of why people would dislike others, and he listed these proverbs. Well, naturally, because of my conditioned love of proverbs, that intrigued me. And I thought, you know, that would be such a great study. And so I told the congregation on a Sunday night, I said, hey, we're going to begin probably a two-part lesson, and we're going to go into a study of Proverbs, and we're going to talk about why people don't like us. And so I said, we'll try to cover 20 tonight, and maybe next Sunday night we'll cover 20 more. Now, you preachers are going to know exactly what I mean when I say this. I got about 7 or 8 minutes into the lesson, and it was the most negative nonverbal feedback I've ever had in a lesson. And I thought to myself, wow, this is tough. And so, you know, as a speaker, you just kind of have to play mind games with yourself. And you're like, all right, just pretend it's positive feedback and keep going. And so I just pretended it's positive feedback and kept going. But constantly, it nagged at me. And so, I kid you not, we have about 4 steps coming off. As I extended the invitation and told everybody to stand, as I was walking down the steps, I said to myself, I'll never preach the rest of that sermon. I thought, next Sunday night, I'm going to pretend like the sermon series was over and we are moving on to another. And I meant it. I was like, there is no way I'm finishing that sermon. It was the worst experience I ever had preaching. And I got back in the foyer and people started coming out saying, wow, I think I look forward to next Sunday night. I know I've got about 6 or 8 I made notes of I've got to work on this week. I didn't realize I did so many things that people didn't like. And it was comment after comment like that. And it wasn't like, hey, great sermon, I enjoyed that. No comments like that. But it was the comments like, I realize there's a lot of things I need to work on. And so because of that, I thought, okay, we'll persevere, we'll finish it. And then honestly, I still was like, I'm glad that's over. And then a few months later, a place where I was preaching a gospel sermon, a gospel meeting, they called and said, hey, we'd like to request a few of the sermons for a gospel meeting. And they said, we'd like to have at least 2 nights of 40 reasons why people don't like you. I was like, you got to be kidding me. You really want that for, do you realize that it'll be like a love-hate relationship. You won't like it, but you'll kind of like it because you believe in the power of God's word, you know. And so I kind of stand here today telling you, I don't expect you in one sense to like this lesson. I really don't. Because odds are, however many of these 40 that we'll cover, we won't get even up to 20 probably, but however many we'll cover, some of them will step on every one of our toes, and we'll be reminded that there are probably a lot of ways that we live life that just doesn't reflect the wisdom of God in the way that God expects for us to live. There we go. All right. Let's jump right in. This may be one of the 40 reasons why people don't like you. Are you a loner? Proverbs, the 18th chapter and verse 1 says, a man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He rages against all wise judgments. Why do people want to be loners? I don't know all the reasons why people want to be loners, but I know this, that wisdom out of Proverbs teaches us that if you desire to be a loner, you are raging against all that is wise. Here may be one of the most basic reasons why individuals like to be loners. You know, if you do choose to live your life absent of sharing in relationship with others, you free yourself from so much responsibility. Every person that we share in a friendship with, we also carry a responsibility. Responsibility that is this simple. If you have a need, I'll try to be there for you. If you need an ear, I'll try to be there to listen. If you have baggage that needs to be shared, burdens that need to be shared, I'll be that friend and I'll try to be there for you. If there is sin in your life, I'll try to be the one to confront you and encourage you to turn away from it. You know, we could go on and on listing of all the areas of responsibility we have when we share in relationships. You know, how many times have we said to someone who is single, listen, you don't have to get married. But if you do get married, you need to be ready to take on the responsibility of, depending on who you're talking to, of a husband, of a wife. Listen, while you're single, you don't have to bear that responsibility. And you're fine. But if you decide to get into this relationship, that becomes your responsibility. Well, the principle here is those that choose isolation, they choose a freeing of responsibility. And they might even tell themselves, this is the way to live. And God would say, that's not the way to live. That's not wisdom. That rages against wisdom. You and I are designed to share in relationships, first and foremost with God. And then if we do share in relationship with God, He's going to teach us the second greatest commandment, to love our neighbor as ourself. And so if your idea of the perfect life is, I just want to get away from everybody, that may be one reason why people don't like you. I'm having problems here. All right, number two, are you a bad listener? That could be one of the reasons that people don't like you. Proverbs 18th chapter verse 13 says, "He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him." Don't say it out loud, but I can give you this illustration, and every one of you will say, "Oh, I know somebody that does that." You know those people, they're people that have developed a horrible habit, and that is they absolutely do not listen when you talk. And you can see their lips starting to move. And all they're doing is they're waiting for you to finish talking or at least to take a breath. And they're going to jump in with whatever they're going to say the whole time. So in other words, what you've been saying, you might as well not even say. Because you know they're not listening. All they're doing is waiting to be able to say what they want to say. Listening to understand is an exercise that we ought to all use in life, but especially we use it sometime in counseling. And it's the idea where you say, hey, the one person is going to voluntarily say, I am not going to speak at all over the next few minutes. I'm going to sit and I am going, thank you, brother. I'm going to sit and I'm going to listen to you, not to think about, and here's the key, not to think about what my response is going to be. And if you've never tried this, this will change your life. Tell yourself the next time you're in conversation, especially if there's conversation that maybe is a little heavy, that something needs to be resolved. When you listen, tell yourself, as they talk, I am not going to think about what my response is going to be. Instead, I'm going to think 100% about where they are coming from. I may not agree with what they're saying, but I at least want to understand them. I want to be able to say, if I need to, I could tell others how you feel and think about this because I understand exactly where you're coming from. Doesn't mean I agree with it, but I understand exactly what you are saying. After we understand, then we can have a much more compassionate response because we've listened. And now we can respond not only to the topic, but we can even respond to where they are coming from. So many times, parents discipline children and they never listen to understand their child. It doesn't mean that once you listen to understand your child, you're not going to discipline them. But it does mean that you can have a much greater success at righteously correcting your child if you take time to listen first. And so if you're a bad listener, that would be a reason that people don't like you. Number three, are you quick to give an opinion? Proverbs 12 and 23 says, a prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. A prudent man. That's what we want to be. In that wisdom, knowing how to conduct your life, can you have knowledge about a discussion that's taking place and choose not to share it? A prudent person can. A fool says, oh, we're talking about this? Let me tell you what I think about it. Put four or five people together. Let the conversation begin. Every time a new topic comes up, there'll be somebody in the conversation that has to say something about every topic that comes up. Last part of verse 23 says, that's a fool. A prudent man can have knowledge on a situation and not even open their mouth. We could apply that to a lot of situations. Social media would be a good application of that, but we will move on at this moment. But just think about, everybody has an opinion. So why do you think that your opinion needs to be shared every time an opportunity is given? What if everybody felt that way? Well, nobody would like it if everybody felt that way, and nobody likes it when you feel that way. Number four, are you argumentative? 40 reasons why people might not like you. Or number four, are you argumentative? We drop out of Proverbs on this when we back up to the Beatitudes of our Lord. And He said in Matthew 5 and 9, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. I like this idea of peacemaker because it shows us that a peaceful situation is never because everybody took a passive route. I really think sometimes we're really misled to think, well, peace just means that you don't strike back in vengeance. No, study it in Scripture. Peace is the fruit of the fruit of the Spirit. Peace is the result of people working to produce fruit. Right here he said, blessed are the peace makers. Not blessed are those that just enjoy passively sitting around and hoping that peace prevails. I grew up really enjoying working with wood. Framed some houses, worked in a wood shop, that kind of thing. So when I hear the term peacemaker, I can't help but think about also the description of a cabinet maker. How do cabinets exist? Well, they exist because somewhere there is a cabinet maker. You see families that always have peace? In that family are a lot of people that are peacemakers. They can decide when you can have Christmas and work through everybody's schedules. And they can make peace. You ever seen other people that they can't give an inch? We celebrate Christmas on December 25th at 1 o'clock in my home, and that's just the way it is. That's not a peacemaker. That's not at all. And so you look at it and say, is there a reason why people don't like you? Yeah. When you go around constantly destroying peace, nobody enjoys that. Nobody enjoys, oh yeah, I'm friends with them, and it is so tough to be friends with them. Number five, are you forgiving? Proverbs 20 and verse 3, it is honorable for a man to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel. You got a situation that has already created some kind of strife. Who are you in that point in time? Are you the person that, hey, I can really get this quarrel going? Or are you the person that's very honorable and says, hey, I know it started, but I want to be the one that stops it? And can you go and can you ask for forgiveness? Now, before you just jump out on a limb and say, sure, I can ask for forgiveness, I'd say just a little test. When's the last time you said the words, will you please forgive me? And if you say, I don't remember the last time I said that, well, that could be a reason why people don't like you. No one loves to be around someone that feels like they're never wrong, and when they are wrong, because you are wrong, like you're wrong regularly, you're wrong often. And so no one likes being around a person that thinks they're never wrong. Everybody else knows you're wrong, but they think they're never wrong, and because of that arrogance, they never ask for the forgiveness of sins. But notice, an honorable man can literally stop the strife. Hey, I was wrong here. I'm sorry. Will you forgive me in that? Number six, do you cut someone down? Proverbs 12 and 18 says, there is one who speaks like the piercing of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. Isn't it interesting to think that, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, words will never hurt me. This is not true at all. As a matter of fact, here he literally holds up the metaphor of a sword and says, now imagine that being pierced into your flesh. Obviously, that would be intense pain. It could lead to destruction. And so we say, wow, that's difficult. And so there's one who speaks like that. But then there's the one that has wisdom. And what does he do? He uses his tongue not to promote the injury of life, but to promote the well-being, the soundness, the healthiness of life. I'll give you an illustration. It gives me cold chills to always give this illustration. I want you to think about your nice, sharp kitchen knife. The one you go to whenever you're going to be cutting things and hopefully cutting them quickly. And so you're just slicing right through your vegetables and you accidentally from tip all the way through immediately come through your finger. Oh, that hurts. That hurts. Your words hurt just like that. The piercing of the sword, the cutting of a knife in flesh. That's how bad words can hurt. Now, think about it. The person that says those words, it's real easy for them to say, I didn't mean anything about that. Listen, that was no big deal what I said. No. It wasn't a big deal to you because, number one, you're acting foolishly and it didn't cut your finger. Talk to the person that your words cut their finger. Talk to the person that your words cut them deeply. And it's a big deal to them. So now we reverse this and say, you know, it's the wise person that promotes health with their words. It's a fool that says, oh, it's no big deal if I cut you with my words. Number 7, are you an offensive person? In Proverbs, the 18th chapter, verse 19 says, a brother offended is harder to win than a strong city, and contentions are like bars of a castle. Now you imagine in the days of war, looking at a strong city and having an army that is standing back looking at it and saying, because that city is so fortified, it's so strong, it's going to be very, very difficult for us to be able to take over that city. You look at someone that you've offended, you've hurt them deeply, it's going to be very hard for you then to say, what can I do to destroy that offense? What can I do to bring us back together again? This verse is not giving us all the answers of how to heal the offense. This proverb is saying, hello, do you realize how serious offense is? Once you have offended someone, this proverb is saying, you might as well go out and try to conquer a big city. In other words, you've created a mess. Maybe you can work through it, but just know this. You ought to live a very careful, wise, and cautious life in how you deal with other people. Number 8, are you too blunt? A fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them back. Unless you're over 80. And you know, and if you're over 80, hey, I'm old enough to say whatever I want to say. Book, chapter, and verse, please. You can be a fool over 80. Like, there's a lot of fools that are older than 80. Foolishness or wisdom has nothing to do with age. I assure you that there are 14 and 15-year-olds on this earth that are far wiser than some that are 55 or 75 or 95. Because wisdom has to do from where you dip, what source you go to guide your life. And so a teenager can be very wise if they dip down into the source of wisdom to make the decisions in their life. And a fool is very foolish because of where they dip into to gain the source, the knowledge of how to live their life. And so here we think, okay, are you too blunt? Notice that first line where it says, a fool vents all of his feelings. Now, I want to put a little disclaimer here in the sense of, please don't misunderstand me. I believe that Christian counseling is powerful, so helpful, it's so needed. I couldn't say enough good about Christian counseling. I could talk to you for hours about how I believe in it. That's a good place to unpack all your feelings. That's a good place to say, let me tell you some things I'm dealing with from my youth. Let me tell you some things I'm dealing with where I've been hurt deeply and injured in my life. Or maybe you have a few close friends. Those close friends are a good place to sit down and say, can we talk about something? I want to tell you some stuff that I've had to wrestle with for years, and I just want someone that's wise and loving and compassionate to hear me. But you know what is foolish? What is foolish is to think that you need to just spray everything you are feeling and everything that you're thinking to everybody around you. We have a mentality in our culture today, it appears, that's the idea of, hey, if you're feeling it, you ought to just express it. You don't need to hold back. Well, just keep in mind, which source are you going to? Because that's exactly what a fool does. A fool doesn't hold back. A fool just says, I tell you what, you're going to know where you stand with me because I don't hold back. Well, hello, fool. It's good to meet you. I'm David. And there are people that do live like that. And the Lord described who they are. A pretty good compliment is if somebody says to you, you know, I've known them for a long time and I still don't know everything about them. I still don't know what they think about everything. Yeah, that's a sign of wisdom. Social media has become an outlet for some people to post or tweet or send out every feeling they have. And it's so foolish. A fool does that and will say, well, I'm just getting it out there. But a wise man holds back. And so how blunt are you? Everybody, I assure you, everybody does not want to know everything you think. Number 9, do you drop the ball? When we look at Proverbs, the 10th chapter and 26, as vinegar to the teeth, ooh, that's tough, and smoke to the eyes, that hurts so much. So is the lazy man to those who send him. You know, you think about vinegar to the teeth, I think about, of course, there's no reason to do this, and hopefully you never have, but tinfoil to a cavity. Oh, that, don't ever do that. That's like biting on electric fence. That's terrible. And so what he does is, in Proverbs here, he just names stuff that immediately when you think about them, you're like, ooh, that's bad. That like really hurts. That's not good. And he says, now, go out and have a need. Like, I'm talking like a deadline. This has got to be done today. And send a lazy person to do it. Oh, you mean they didn't show up? What do you mean they didn't show up? Like, we were very clear when I talked to them this morning that they were going to get this and they were going to drive here and they were going to drop it off to you at 10 o'clock. You're telling me they never showed up? Oh. If you're constantly a person that sometime you deliver, sometime you don't. You give a commitment, sometime you keep it, sometime you don't. I'll call you tomorrow. Sometime you do, sometime you don't. I'll meet you for lunch, 11 o'clock, such and such restaurant. Sometime you show up at 11 o'clock, sometime you don't. And then you say, I don't know why people don't like me. Well, it's real clear. Nobody enjoys, big capitalized letters, nobody enjoys sharing in a relationship, especially a working relationship, with someone that drops the ball. Even if you only drop it 10% of the time. Because every time they're dealing with you, the question in their mind is, okay, do I need to go ahead and get a backup? Because frequently they drop the ball on this. And, oh, this is too important. I can't depend on them. I better get somebody that's really dependable for this one. Number 10, are you a selfish person? Proverbs 11 and 26 says, the people will curse him who withholds grain, but blessings will be on the head of him who sells it. Their commerce would have been a little bit different of a marketplace than what we're accustomed to today. Today, if you want to go buy some groceries and a store for whatever reason says we're not going to sell it to you, you just drive down to another grocery store. You could even choose restaurants. You could not say, I'm going to bed hungry tonight because no one would sell me grain. In their day and time, the poor depended upon the few who had the grain. Now imagine if the few that had the grain said, hey, we're not going to sell our grain for about a week or two, and when everybody gets really desperate, they will pay outrageous prices for our grain. Now, you could argue that's free market. You do what you want to do. Well, it depends if you're trying to live a foolish life or a life of wisdom. And God teaches us here that even though we do business, God's not opposed to business. God's not opposed to profit. But what God is opposed to is when we do business without compassion. When we do business in a way that says, you know what? I don't care how this affects you. I don't care how it makes you feel. I'm going to do anything I can do to get all that I can get. It's a selfish approach. And so imagine a person that is desperate for supper. And he goes up to that individual and says, do you have some grain that you could sell me? And the person says, you know, I wasn't planning on selling any grain this week, but if you really need some, I'll gladly sell you some. Now imagine that person going home with their grain for supper, and imagine how they're thinking in their mind, I'm so thankful for them. They're such a good person. That's the kind of people like. Here in verse 26 are the type of people don't like. Do you make fun of people? In Proverbs the 17th chapter and verse 5, he gives a very sobering approach to this, kind of shocking approach. He who mocks the poor reproaches his maker. He who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished. And so we see someone that is needy, whatever the situation may be, and because of foolishness and a callous heart, we say, hey, look at them. And we begin to mock them and make fun of them. God says, just know that as you're doing that, you're mocking me. You're mocking the Creator. We shouldn't take pleasure at people's calamities. We might even look and say, serves them right. Look, they're getting what they deserve. But the last part of that verse says, oh, you want to take pleasure in their calamity, thinking they're getting what they deserve? You'll get what you deserve. It will not go unpunished that you take pleasure in them. So people won't like us if we make fun of them. Number 12, reasons people don't like us. Proverbs the 10th chapter and in verse 6. Blessings are on the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. Are you two-faced? In other words, are you hiding things? Another way to translate the last part of that verse says, the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. So think about when we go and we mistreat someone over here. And then over here, we're caught on the carpet. Hey, you're treating me really nice, but I heard about what you said. The wicked uses their mouth to conceal their violence. Oh, I didn't really say that. They must have been lying to you. You must have misunderstood that. I didn't say that at all. And the person apologized. Oh, I'm sorry. I had heard that. And you walk away and say, whew, I'm glad they believed my lie. Well, that is what leads to destructive behavior toward relationships. We can't continue to live like that. Our sins will find us out. And so this hypocritical way of living and expecting our mouth to always get us out of the violence that we've done is a reason why people won't like us. 13, you can't keep a secret. Proverbs 11 and 13 says, a talebearer reveals secrets, and he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. Oh, you didn't mean for me to tell that to people? I'm sorry. You never said don't tell anybody. I just thought I wouldn't have to say that to you. You know, do you feel like everything that people say to you needs to be said to someone else? If you do feel that way, odds are you're a gossiper, and odds are you lack self-control. At this moment, can you remember in your mind many things that you've heard over the last few weeks or months that you wouldn't repeat to anyone? Not because they asked you not to repeat it, but just because there's no reason. There's nothing good that would come out of it. And you're in a conversation over the next few days and somebody's talking about some mistake somebody made, and you could say, oh, I was talking to so-and-so, they did that same thing. Why? Why would you do that? We ought to be experts at concealing secrets. Now, I'm not saying secrets that enable people to continue in sin. I'm not talking about secrets that enable people to continue going around and hurting other people. I'm not talking about that kind of negative. I'm talking about just the idea that says, you know what? There's a lot of things in life we will just learn about other people that there is no reason to feel like we should ever repeat that. Okay. Good deal. I told you people didn't like this lesson. They even asked for it to be shorter. Okay. All right. Number 14, as we think about reasons and okay, if we're stopping at 10 after, I tell you what, I'm going to give you just a few more, listing them, not explaining them, and I'm going to close on one particular one. Are you inflexible and controlling? Proverbs 14 and 4. That's not an easy proverb to understand, but once you understand it, there's a great wisdom in that. Number 15, are you an insensitive person? Proverbs 27 and 14 is one that I want to pause here for a moment and kind of capitalize on this for just a moment. Notice how Proverbs 27 and 14 reads. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, it will be counted a curse to him. I've already shared with you my dad's love for Proverbs. And I think I've mentioned that I grew up on a farm. And so dad worked a secular job. And so we did farming after we came in from work and school in the evenings. And we farmed all day every Saturday. That was kind of our life. And so dad was always up early in the morning. He was usually up around 4, 4:15 every morning. And dad is a morning person. Usually about 8, 8:15, he's out for the count. And it was that way all my years growing up. And so in the mornings, you would even hear mom in the kitchen as she's cooking breakfast. You'd hear mom say, "Roy, hold your voice down. You're going to wake everybody in the house up." You could hear, you know, and he would be helping her get some pots and pans out, and he'd clink and clang. And I mean, just we had wood heat. If it's the winter time, he'd load up the wood stove, and there was no quietness about it. It shook the whole house. And then he would come in whenever it was the time that he felt like he needed to wake me up, especially on Saturday mornings. He was always the one that woke me up on Saturday mornings. He'd come in, and you know, if I was in high school, I'd been out to 12 o'clock that night before on Friday night. He'd come in, he'd say, "Son, it's a good morning this morning." And he'd sit on the side of the bed, and he'd, "What'd you do last night? Did you win the football game last night?" And now I'm just sitting there, "Dad, please just, let's talk about this later. Please just let me wake up." All right, son, you know. And so one night, and I don't remember why, but one night he and mom were away and I was the one at home at bedtime. And that was rare for dad to be out past bedtime. And so I was laying in bed reading my Bible that night, and I was reading through Proverbs, and I got to this verse. I kid you not. I looked back at it like two or three times, like, "This, you gotta be kidding me. Like, this is too good to be true. Like, this is my dad's book." And so, you know, before the days of cell phones and even answer machines, before the days, you know, how every home had a place where you left notes. You know, if you were going to leave and go somewhere, you just left a note. "Hey, gone whatever, be in at whatever time." Or, "Hey, so-and-so called and they want you to call them back." You know, so we just had a regular place. And so I went to our place of leaving regular notes. When you came in the house, that's the first place you always check. And so I left out a note and I said, "You must, before you go to bed tonight, read Proverbs 27 and 14. The next morning, the house was quiet. And never since that day have any of us been awakened with a loud voice because of my father. Proverbs is powerful if we'll choose to live them. Proverbs does no good if you and I read it and say, "Well, that's true. That's a real good verse." And then we foolishly go out and live contrary to it. So may God bless us as we pursue wisdom, as if, as Proverbs would say, it is a great treasure. I think they're there.
Just go to Mount Julia Church of Christ, search that, and search sermons.
Yes. I can't remember what year it was. It's probably about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, but yes.
What was the other place you preached?
Waverly?
Waverly, Tennessee.
Waverly Church of Christ.
So
yeah.